Hello, everybody. This week's Parashas Ki Tzetze, and there's a fascinating Vilna Gaon towards the beginning of the Parsha. The story goes, a legend goes, that there was once a man who got married to a woman, and unfortunately it didn't go very well, and they got divorced a couple weeks after their marriage. And then the guy got married immediately afterwards to another woman, but lo and behold, the first wife of his was pregnant, and she ended up having a baby, but the second wife of this guy ended up having the baby first. She ended up having a premature baby at 7 months. So his second wife had a baby that was born first, but the first wife was technically, she conceived first. She was with her first. So the question was posed to the Vilna Gaon, supposedly, who is the Bechor? Who gets the double portion allotted to a Bechor? So the Vilna Gaon said, if you look in this week's Parsha, the Parsha in Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Tezvav, the Parsha says, Ki siyena la'ish shtei nashim. When a man has two wives, ha'achas ahuva va'achas nuah. One wife is beloved, and one wife is hated. Pasuk says, V'yaldu lo'i banim, ha'ahuva va'achas nuah. And they'll both give birth to him children, ha'ahuva va'achas nuah. So the Pasuk seems to say that the beloved wife is giving birth to him first. And then hasnua. But the Pasuk ends off, but the Pasuk says that the firstborn son is to the hated one. How does that make sense? Seemingly, if the first wife to have a baby was the Ahuva, the loved one, how could it be that the Ben HaBechor is to the Snua? Says the Vilna Gaon, if we understand that Bechira goes after the time of conception, it makes a lot of sense. They gave birth to him in the sense that Ahuva gave first, and then the Snua. But the Ben HaBechor is the Snua. Says again, I'll prove it to you. Why? Because the Pasuk says further on, Ki es Bechor ben HaSnua Yakir. He has to recognize the son of the hated one first. Lasis Leipishnai, to give him double portion. Ki hu Reishis Oinei. Because he is the first of his strength. The Pasuk seems to explicitly say that the reason for Bechira is based on the fact that he's the first of his strength, which obviously means he was conceived first. So that is how the Vilna Gaon supposedly ruled in this case, that Bechira is based on time of conception and not based on time of birth. Now, this story is hotly debated if it's true or not. The Hamak Dover, the Netziv, writes in his Pirush Al Torah the complete opposite in this parasha, to see how he deals with all the psukim. And he writes that the opposite in the halacha is that we go after the time of birth, we don't care about conception, and he says that the story about the Gaon is made up. In the Vilna Gaon Chumash, they bring all the research on the Gaon, they found the source the first time this was brought down, not a very, very credible source about the Gaon. There's different versions of his story there, but that being said, one of the biggest questions on this Vilna Gaon is, we all know their famous Rashi by Yaakov and Esav, the Rashi points out that Yaakov was actually conceived first, and so he came out second, and Esav was conceived second, but the Torah ultimately says that the Bechira belongs to Esav, and Yaakov had to buy it from him. So, in Halacha, most Paiskim go that Bechira is based on birth, not based on conception, but definitely a fascinating Vilna Gaon with a fascinating Diuk in the Psukim, which definitely has to be understood deeper, but that is the discussion on this Tussock. There's another story in regards to this parasha with the Vilna Gaon. There was once two brothers who their father died and they were going to inherit the money. And the older brother said, you know, I'm a Bechor, I get double portion. And the younger brother said, I don't know about such things, Bechor, I get equal half. And they went to the Rav and the Rav said, no, the Torah says a Bechor gets double. The younger brother said, I don't know Torah, I don't know Chumash, I only know Aleph Beis. Show me in the Aleph Beis where it says that a Bechor gets two, and I'll give up my portion, but otherwise I want equal portion. Fine, Aleph Beis is not much to show. So they go to the Vilna Gaon to try to solve the problem. So he comes to the Vilna Gaon, he tells the Vilna Gaon, I need to see in the Aleph Beis that a Bechor gets Pishnai. So the Vilna Gaon said, no problem. He says, look at the Aleph Beis. Which letters in the Aleph Beis are exactly double in Gematria in regards to letter before them? So Beis, Chaf, and Resh. Beis is equal to 2, it's double the one before, which is Aleph. Chaf is equal to 20, which is double the one before, which is 10. And Reish is equal to 200, which is double the one before, which is 100. Says that we're going, in all the Aleph Beis, the only letters that are double the one before them are Beis Chaf Reish, which spells Bechar. That's the proof from the Aleph Beis to this concept that a Bechar gets Pi Shnai. So further in the parasha tells us about the concept of Ben Sarah Meir, the wayward son. And the Torah tells us that if it's a boy, he's 13 years old, and he acts extremely, so to speak, recklessly. He's stealing, he's eating raw meat, drinking lots of wine, and he fulfills all the requirements of the parasha. The Torah says he has to be killed because the Torah says that we can see that in the future, this guy, he's going to keep trying to get his way, keep trying to keep his habits up, and eventually he's going to run out of money, he's going to steal all his parents' money, and eventually he's going to start trying to become a bandit and steal other people's money, and he'll become basically a danger to the public. Better he should die now innocent than to die later guilty. And the Torah is basically giving us a very unique concept of punishing somebody in advance. But there's an interesting question posed in Sefer Ruach HaYod. The Gemara tells us, in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Saita, that a Ben Sarah Ramayra is only a Ben Sarah Ramayra if both his father and his mother agree to bring him to Bezdin as a Ben Sarah Ramayra. As the Pasuk says, V'tafsu v'ovi v'imai, and his father and mother will grab him, and they'll come v'amru al-ziknei irai b'neinu zeh, this our son, einena shemeya b'kalein, doesn't listen to our voice. It has to be a unified thing from the parents. Not only that, says the Gemara, even if, let's say, the mother and father both agree to do this, which is in itself makes it almost impossible, if either one of the parents decides at some point to forgive him, this Ben Sarah Meir, for stealing the wine and stealing the meat, he no longer becomes a Ben Sarah Meir. And the question is obvious. If the reason we're putting this guy to death is because he's going to become a public safety issue, it's because he's so rotten now that we see in the future there's no hope, he's just going to be dangerous, why does his parents' forgiveness or his parents' lack of a refusal to bring him to Bezin, why does that make a difference? Why does Halacha value that? Says the Ruach Aliyah, you see from here, that the only reason this Ben Sarah Meir is guaranteed to become a danger to the public, it's only because his parents gave up on him. But if even one of his parents believe in him, and if only one of his parents feel like he has a chance to turn him around, but then the whole thing is off, all the bets are off, there's no guarantee that this kid is going to turn out bad, and he still has a chance. And it's a very powerful lesson for all of us that as long as we don't give up on helping our kids figure it out and helping our kids do what's right, the Torah tells us that all hope is not lost, and there's always a chance for them to come back. Later in the parasha tells us the mitzvah of shiluach hakan, which means that if a person goes in the forest and he sees a bird's nest, he's not allowed to take the mother bird together with the eggs. He has to chase away the mother bird, and then he can take the eggs or the chicks. He can't take them both. And there's a lot of discussion in the Rishonim, what exactly is the reason behind this mitzvah, the famous Mishnah in Brachos, which says if someone prays that Hashem should have mercy on us, just like he has mercy on the mother bird, we quiet him. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tefillah understands the Mishnah literally, that the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan has nothing to do with having mercy. He says, because in fact, if we're worried about having mercy on the bird, then why are we allowed to kill the bird? Why is Torah allowed us to shech the bird altogether? So therefore, the Rambam learns in Hilchos Tefillah, the Rambam explains that it's a gzeiros hakasav, it's a decree, which we don't understand. The Ramban over there argues, Ramban over here in Chumash, and the Ramban says that the Gemara there doesn't mean it's not because of mercy. The Gemara just means that it's not because Hashem feels bad about the bird. Hashem's teaching us to have the midah of mercy. And that's what the Mishnah means. You can't pray, Hashem, your mercy should be the same as you have mercy on the bird. It's the mitzvah about us developing the character trait of mercy. But the question still stands that the Rambam asks, which is a very valid question. If we're really worried about having mercy on the bird, so then why are we allowed to kill the bird and eat it? Why is it specifically this about sending the mother bird away? So I saw a very interesting idea in the Sefer Drash Mordechai. He said over the name of Reis Chaim Zonnefeld. Reis Chaim Zonnefeld said, the pshat in why Shiluach HaKan specifically we're not allowed to do, he says, because what's going on over here? A guy comes and he sees a mother bird on top of her nest. So usually it's not so easy to catch a bird. Usually birds fly away. But yet here he has an opportunity to grab the mother bird because she's not going to fly away because she wants to stay and protect her nest. So he's taking advantage of the bird's, so to speak, protectiveness and its willingness to take care of its children, that level of cruelty to extort somebody else's or another creature's willingness to protect its young, that the Torah says we can't do. That level of cruelty you can't have. You want to eat a bird because you're hungry, the Torah says, okay, fine, you can eat, they're a lower life form, you're allowed to eat them. But to extort somebody when they're doing something like that, protecting their young, that the Torah says is usur, and that's the level of cruelty that we're not allowed to have, and that's the midah that we're supposed to be learning from this mitzvah of Shiluach HaKan. Later on in the parasha, Parak of Gimel Pasuk Dalet, the Torah tells us, "Layavoi amoini umayavi bekahal Hashem, gam dora siri layavoi lehem bekahal Hashem ad olam." The Torah forbids the nations of Amon and Moav, the males of the nations of Amon and Moav, to get married into Klal Yisrael forever. Unlike the Mitzrayim and the Edomim, who come after the third generation, Amon and Moav are out. Why? Says the Torah in Pasuk Hey, "Al dvar asher loykidmu eschem belechem b'mayim." Because of the fact that they didn't greet you with bread and water, when you were leaving Egypt, and also because they hired Alecha as Bilam ben Ba'or, mipisor Aram Na'arayim l'ka Alecha. Because they hired Bilam to try to curse you and to destroy you. So, many questions on this pasuk. First of all, the fact that the pasuk is going to put the fact that someone didn't greet somebody with bread and water, together with the fact that they tried hiring someone to curse and obliterate Klal Yisrael, seems to be, you know, of two different scales of magnitude. Not giving bread and water seems like, hey, you're not such a sweet guy. Trying to murder an entire nation seems to be a little bit more extreme. And number two is, the Mitzrayim, the Edomim, did a lot more. Mitzrayim tried to kill us, they enslaved us. Many, many nations since then, unfortunately, have tried to wipe out Klal Yisrael. And yet the Torah is saying, no, this, that they didn't bring out bread and water, and they tried hiring Bilam, this makes this nation out. They're done. What's so unique about what's going on over here? So, the Balei Musar explained, the Sefer Darkei Musar, and Sefer Josh Mordechai, they say that the Pshat is as follows. What the Torah is pointing out here is we're not talking about sort of getting back at nations or, so to speak, you know, trying to pay back past grievances. We're talking about the idea that certain nations have the right character traits which allows them to mix into Klal Yisrael. Their DNA, so to speak, their genetics, are good and they can blend into Klal Yisrael. And most nations, whatever their past sins were, if they come and say, we want to join Klal Yisrael, we want to be under the Shekhinah, we want to be under Hashem, that's fine. There's a certain midah, though, which Amon and Moav has, which has no place in Klal Yisrael. And that's the midah of Kafui Taif. The midah of not repaying a kindness, not appreciating the fact that their whole existence of Amon and Moav comes from Loit, who Avraham Avinu saved from Sodom. The fact that they don't recognize that they owe Klal Yisrael everything, and that they can not only not greet Klal Yisrael bread and water like they're supposed to, they can even go hire Bilam to curse them out, that shows that they have this horrible midah of kafay tayv. They don't repay kindness, they don't recognize kindness, and they take things for granted. And that's the midah of the Torah, which you cannot have in Klal Yisrael, because the entire foundation of a Jew's Yiddishkeit is hakaras hatayv. The Sefer Chavos Levavos begins his Sefer after Shaar Yichud. He starts with the building blocks of a Jew's Yiddishkeit is Shaar HaBechina, which is a person supposed to sit down and recognize and be Beichin, and to look through creation and see all the kindness that Kadosh Baruch Hu does for a person. A person comes to Avas Hashem. He loves Hashem. Why? Because he appreciates everything he does for him. If a Yid would have that midah of Kafei Tov, there'd be no way to start. That's why this nation specifically, these two nations, get singled out because of this one thing, which although it seems small, its root is very, very, very evil. Its root is this midah of not recognizing and appreciating the kindness that's done to them. With one last var, when I end off, the parasha says, Ki yikach ish isha, and a man marries a woman, and he doesn't like her, ki matza be'arvas davar, he found a matter of impropriety with her, because of l'sefer krisus, and he writes her a divorce document, v'nasan be'yadav shulchan beis, and he can send her out. So Rashi on the spot brings the famous machlekes b'shamei b'shillel, is what is significant grounds for divorce? The Torah says, because he found in her a ervas davar, that he found in her something which was improper. She did a lashon in a language of erva, she did something very inappropriate. Beis Hillel says, no, it's not specifically that. That just could be one example. Even if hikdicha tavshile, even if she burnt his food, he can throw her out. So I once saw a story with Yaakov Galinsky that one time he came to collect by a certain wealthy person, collect money for his yeshiva. And he knocks on the door and the guy says, come in. And he sits down and he tells him, I'm collecting for my yeshiva. And the guy says, you know what, you come every year and I'd love to give you, but unfortunately this year business is really not doing well. And, you know, I'm sorry, I really can't help you out with the yeshiva. Finances aren't where they usually are. So he told him, Rabbi told him, this parsha, we find this concept, Beis Hillel says, a guy can divorce his wife because she burnt his soup. How does that make sense? Beis Hillel, that's it, a lady burns his soup and that's it, you throw her out? Does that make any sense? He says, I'll tell you pshat on Beis Hillel. He says, you got to read the pasuk carefully. You know, imagine a husband and wife, and the soup pot burns. So there's different wives. There's a really, really good wife, really a sweet wife, and she says, you know, I love you so much. Here, you take the top part of the pot where it's not burnt, and I'll eat the burnt part on the bottom. Then there's a regular wife, and she says, look, you know, I'm sorry the soup burnt, but we're in this together. Marriage is a partnership. We'll both get some of the good parts and some of the burnt part. But then there's a special wife who says, you know, you get the burnt part, and I'll eat the good part. Says Beis Hillel, Higdicha tav shiloi. She burnt his food, not tav shilom, their food. She gave him the burnt part. That's why he's throwing her out. Says Rabbi Galinsky, right now, it seems like finances are bad. Let me ask you a question. Did everything else that you spend money on, did that go down? Or right now, Baruch Hashem, you still have enough money for vacations, you have enough money for all your food and restaurants and stuff you like to do, and you're just going to try to cut on the stuff that, you know, the unnecessary items, like the stuck of giving and supporting institutions, and you're basically telling Gosh Baruch Hu that I'm going to burn, so to speak, your pot, your stuff, and the good stuff I'll keep for myself. So, it's, you know, a lesson for all of us, a lot of times think, whenever, unfortunately, going through times, are we giving Gosh Baruch Hu kind of the shorter end of the stick, or are we in it together through and through? We should all have a wonderful Shabbos.